Funding for WBUR comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Now a look at the reliability of political polling this year. While most national and swing state polling shows former Vice President Joe Biden leading President Trump, the numbers are being eyed with some skepticism. It's partly because polling in the 2016 presidential race missed support in swing states for Trump and led to predictions of a win for Hillary Clinton. So, can we trust the polls in 2020? To find out what's changed since 2016, we spoke with Steve Cazella, president of the Mass Inc. Polling Group, who's done lots of polling for WBUR. He explained what went wrong for pollsters 4 years ago.
It was a combination of things, really. It was polls that were showing Hillary Clinton in the lead in key states, and then those polls being taken by aggregators and forecasters and so forth, and basically used to make a probability that Hillary Clinton would be the president. Now, unfortunately, there was not very much polling in some swing states, polls that weren't very good in some swing states, and then polls that didn't account for the education level of voters and basically had too many college-educated voters in their samples. What that then does now, because education is such an indicator of partisanship, is that if you don't account for that, you end up with a sample that is too Democratic. That hasn't always been the case. Education, college education, has not always been as partisan of a thing as it is now.
And is that why today, when polls come out, we consistently see preferences broken down by education levels? That's a direct reaction to 2016?
It is in some way, but it's also just a recognition of the fact that now is such a partisan variable. There were some other things going on, too. I mean, the election was still moving at the last minute. Polls that were done, you know, 7-10 days out missed undecided voters breaking for Donald Trump at the last minute. Voters who didn't like either Trump or Clinton broke very heavily for Trump, and they broke very late for Trump.
What about this phenomenon of shy Trump voters who speak to pollsters? Some say these are folks who are simply not telling pollsters the truth when the pollsters ask the preference question. Do you see it that way?
There have been a lot of attempts to kind of document that phenomenon and find evidence of that. And for the most part, the other factors seem to be more important in understanding why the polls missed in 2016. Another big change that's happened actually since 2016, which I think gives us more confidence in some of those states, is that there wasn't enough state polling. National media outlets were focused on national polling, which, of course, as we all know, is not how we, you know, how we pick the president. So one thing you're seeing is a lot more state polling from groups like the New York Times and the Siena poll and so forth, Washington Post. You know, we never know for sure. We never know if there's going to be some new wrinkle that's come up that we didn't anticipate, like education was in 2016. But at least we can say the things that happened in 2016, pollsters and the broader polling community have addressed those things.
So I should take a moment here to acknowledge that WBUR's own polling in 2016, conducted by you, came within 1% of the final presidential margin in both New Hampshire and Massachusetts. Still, Steve, what have you changed from 2016 to account for what happened back then?
You know, we were already waiting by education, which I think is part of the reason why we did well in New Hampshire and Massachusetts. But if there's one thing in 2020 that I think does pose a special challenge for pollsters, it's all the changes in rules and not knowing exactly what that's going to do to who actually turns out. Will there be a swell of young people? Will there be a swell of, you know, Democrats early and Republicans late? And does that somehow change the balance of party? Does it change, you know, where voters turn out, if it's more difficult to turn in ballots in some places than others?
Do you think in the big picture, 2020 is a make or break event for pollsters in terms of it gives them a chance to redeem themselves in the public eye?
I think, you know, it is certainly important. It is very important for the public's confidence in public opinion research, how this year goes. I mean, I think there's been pretty good polling since in 2018. Some of the off cycles that have happened have been okay. But the other thing is that, you know, we also have to temper our expectations a little. I think polling sometimes has a level of precision that people want from it that it just is not designed to provide. You know, it can describe the race. It can show where the race is right then within a relatively wide level of precision, but it can't predict the future.
You know, it's interesting you say that because I think a lot of people do view polling as predictive instead of just being a snapshot in time. And what you're saying is that there's a public misconception about polling as something like a crystal ball.
There is, I think, that misconception. And I think that the way that political forecasting has evolved and that world has evolved, I think, has contributed to that misunderstanding about what polling can do. And that combined with the way that people that don't do numbers and polling every day, you know, they read Trump has a 30% chance of winning as Clinton is way ahead instead of 30%. That's a lot. You know, imagine like a 300 major league hitter. That's a really good hitter. You wouldn't think, well, that guy's never going to get a hit because 70% of the time he doesn't. That was basically the situation in 2016. That's what 538 was saying, is that Clinton is probably going to win, but there's a really good chance Trump's going to win.
So does that mean you think that there are irresponsible ways to look at polling?
I have come around to the view that it's at least dubious what the social utility of political forecasting is. It's not clear to me that it's providing a public good to take what's supposed to be a snapshot in time and use it to look ahead. I didn't really used to see it that way, but I've heard a couple people question it in a pretty compelling way, and it's influenced my thinking on what the value is of trying to figure out what's going to happen in an election months, and in some cases, even years before it actually happens.
That was Steve Cazella, president of the Mass Inc. Polling Group.